It is good to be with you. Comment through richieallen.co.uk. It is Comment Live. Not going to give you the big preamble. You know Tony Gosling is a terrific radio presenter and journalist formerly of the BBC. Welcome back, my friend. Thanks for coming on. How are you? Earth calling Tony Gosling. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me now?
There you are. Right, let's kick off. The German, we're going to talk about Bucha. The German Foreign Intelligence Agency says it has tapes, intercepts of Russian soldiers discussing the alleged crimes in Bucha. It's open and shut now. The Russian military slaughtered civilians in Bucha. The Germans say so. End of story. Tony.
You mean NATO say so? NATO itching to get into this fight. They're pouring weapons into Ukraine. I don't know if you've ever seen the John Borman film Zardoz, with the giant animated god that floats through the sky, that is from the elite, and to the peasants below it showers down weapons. And I feel that's a little bit like NATO, what NATO is doing to the Ukrainians. It's saying, well, you know, you've got one of the biggest superpowers in the world fighting you, but we can make sure that you win, even though you can't win, by just pouring more and more weapons into your hands. And I wouldn't trust anything that any of the NATO intelligence services say whatsoever about this. I was just listening to a recording from James Files, who was a Chicago mob hitman, allegedly in Dallas in 1963 to kill Kennedy, who talks about the relationship between the mob and the intelligence services. Well, he says the mob is like goldfish in the shark's pool. The intelligence services, the government, are far, far more devious, more powerful than we ever were in Chicago. And I think that's we cannot believe a word that's coming out of the Western press right now, and particularly the intelligence services. As I interviewed a chap a few weeks ago on my program, he's explaining how many of the people now involved in our broadcast media are they are ex-forces. You know, they're people who've worked in psychological operations. Some of them are actually reservists in the army, could be called up any time. So, of course, they're nothing to do with the army, only they are. They've been trained in psychological warfare.
Who are you talking about now? Are you talking about the recurring guests like Tobias Elwood and Tom Tugendhat and all of these types of people?
Well, no, I'm talking about producers. I'm talking about research. Well, I would imagine, you know, the fixers, people who set up interviews. The guy I spoke to, he runs his own strategic communications company, Sven Hughes. And he explained to me, well, lots of my ex-army colleagues, because he was trained by the British Army, and then he was tapped on the shoulder, given a zero on the end of his salary, and told, come and work for the private sector, fixing elections and this sort of thing. And he explained to me that the reservists in the army, many of them are now sitting in studios doing jobs like I wanted to do. Well, I mean, yeah. You know, I was working as a researcher and as a journalist, I wasn't really aware of the armed forces being sitting next to me and in the similar job. But
that sounds like embedding.
The way things work now.
That sounds like embedding. But before we talk more about that, I don't see the Russians as the good guys and the West as the bad guys. I see them all as the bad guys. And soldiers are trained murderers. The humanity is trained out of them. And then they're built back up into people that can fire a weapon on somebody standing 15 feet in front of them. Why are you so convinced that the Russians didn't, as they were leaving Bucha, you know, or that some of them weren't so depressed with everything that was going on that they didn't take it out on the citizens of Bucha? Why are you so convinced that this is a lie?
Because I think for many of those Russian soldiers, they are much happier doing the sort of mission that they've done, which is a kind of soft invasion. That is to say, they're not interested in killing any civilians at all, even though, of course, they're the soft targets that the Nazis might well be using here for false flags.
But how do you know this? I'm challenging you because you deserve it. How do you know that these soldiers have
know,
no interest
Richie,
in, ki- have, in killing civilians? Yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Good man.
And of course, this will have to be properly investigated. It hasn't been at all properly investigated by the Western press. In fact, the British stopped that happening at the UN Security Council on Monday, which they should have allowed a meeting to share evidence. I think the main reason this is if you really want the reason, that I don't think the Brits, or the Russians would have done something like this, just look at what this Russian invasion has entailed. They haven't been charging into the cities, as you would expect if they wanted to take over the country. What they've been doing is they've been, for example, with Kiev, virtually encircling the place. They want to try and draw out the Ukrainian army to fight them outside the cities. They really don't want to be involved in these, what are potentially, as has happened in Mariupol, horrific city firefights. They're trying, I think, the same sort of tactics as the Syrian Arab army used down in Syria a few years ago to get rid of ISIS. You know, they don't want to take back their own country and kill all the civilians. Of course they don't. That's what ISIS want. That's why they're embedded with the civilian population, using them as human shields. If you just look at the deployment of where these troops are, where these Russian troops are, they haven't gone in all guns blazing to take over the country. What they seem to have done is go, first of all, for all of the nearby bio-warfare labs, Pentagon-funded, so that they could gather evidence there, and also to take out any possibility of the Ukrainian Air Force getting into action.
Now, before you carry on, hang on. These bio-warfare labs, I was very interested, just as you were, when the Russians made these claims. But I haven't seen any evidence. Where are the photographs? The Russians haven't published them. Where are they? The photographs and the videos of these bio labs.
The evidence is Diliana Kadashova, I think, has done the best job in compiling the evidence. You can go and have a look at the documents, the contracts, signed in the United States and which is published under Freedom of Information Acts over there, where you can see the US government contracts to do bio warfare and to staff the labs, the programs that were going on in the labs. She's dug out much of this. Her name is almost impossible to spell.
Yeah.
But, you'll find her. She's a Bulgarian journalist who was sacked from her job in mainstream media, like so many of us, these days. And she was sacked for uncovering the pipeline of weapons from the United States going to ISIS through Eastern Europe. And some of it was... Yeah, I mean, basically, she exposed. What she did is she filmed in the ISIS weapons depots over in Syria, and she started writing down serial numbers. She was photographing the weapons and actually getting documentation from the shipping firm and getting photographs of that to prove this was a U.S. operation. In fact,
inside Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, but she has dug out the evidence for the Ukrainian biolab, done a fantastic job on it. But of course, we haven't had any of that reported over here. So, I mean, it just seems to me that this whole gap of 2 days between when the Russians pulled out and when, oh, look, all these poor civilians here have been shot, by Russians, executed by them. This is exactly the sort of thing that is the modus operandi of NATO intelligence services. This is what they do. And I would not at all be surprised if it wasn't even the Ukrainian Nazis that were responsible for this as a false flag. It could even be other NATO-friendly intelligence services going in and doing these sorts of operations, because they seem to be running. They know that they can't win on the ground, I think, that NATO and Ukraine, but they can win a propaganda war. And that's, I think, why I'm so suspicious about the claims made, and also the British reaction. They didn't want to investigate it at the UN. All they were interested in doing was letting it dominate the news, grab the headlines for a few days, and then hopefully everyone will forget about it, thinking it was the Russians.
And there's going to be a vote sometime today at the UN on whether to remove Russia from the Human Rights Council. Now, I do. There's so much news this week that's of huge interest to you, personally to you, because of your own journey as a journalist. So I want to talk about Jimmy Savile in a minute. But before that, I wanted to ask you, where does Hunter Biden's, this is Joe Biden's son, the US president, where does his laptop fit into this story about biolabs in Ukraine?
Well, I think in a way the laptop is a bit of a diversion, because although there is loads of damning evidence about his criminal activity over there and the fact that his dad protected him, I used on last week's show I think it's about a minute long clip of Joe Biden back in the day, back I think it was 2015, recorded, maybe 2016, recorded at the Council on Foreign Relations, explaining, basically boasting about having got the chief prosecutor who was about to prosecute his son Hunter Biden sacked, because he was threatening to withdraw a $1 billion loan to Ukraine. He said, well, look, you know, if you don't sack the prosecutor, you're not going to get the $1 billion. This is Joe Biden, the now president, talking about this. So I think, what there is, the evidence that there is that this country has been controlled by the US. The chief prosecutor is one of the most important people in the country. That is to say, the person who can, can get the government to prosecute people or not. And the idea that Joe Biden was the guy that got him sacked to protect his son's criminal activities in Ukraine shows you who's running the show. It's money people and it's the United States. And the Ukraine has never been an independent sovereign country at all since the Maidan coup in 2014, where the riot police, who were so-called behind the killings, were exonerated. It was snipers brought in by NATO intelligence services that killed some of the police and the demonstrators. In fact, they killed their own people, didn't they? We didn't hear much about that on the BBC in order to take the country over. And that's now absolutely on the record. You know, in history it will be. But, of course, none of this is discussed in our mainstream press, which is what I mean about this being, I think, a propaganda war. Mainly, I would call it a blitz. A propaganda blitz. Another thing from yesterday is the incredible. I really laughed out loud in the car when I heard it. It was Rowan Williams saying that the Russian Orthodox Church should be expelled from the World Council of Churches. Right. Well, okay. The Orthodox Church is the mother church of the Catholic Church and then the Protestant Church and the Nonconformists and the Pentecostals and everybody, right? So they were there before anybody else. 1154 was the split with the Catholics, and the Orthodox is the oldest church on the planet. And there is Rowan Williams, who absolutely openly, publicly, became a Druid, and was filmed doing it, and he is, you know, there he was as the Archbishop of Canterbury and a Druid telling the Orthodox Church that they can't be part of the world Christian community. Well, what a joke. And this is what I mean about propaganda. These people are wheeled out, they're given a script, and stupidly they think nobody will notice what they're up to. But this is just a Russophobia, and the reason they hate the Russians is because the Russians are prepared to stand up to the United States, and they're not going to be pushed around and bullied around. I think Putin's done an amazing job over the last 20 years basically ingratiating himself to them, doing things like, you know, getting on down with the World Economic Forum, etc. And in the meantime, behind the scenes, he's been building up his military in order to defend his people from what is effectively a Western mafia state, which we're living in now over here.
I agree with the latter part of that, Western mafia state. I'm still not sure about Vladimir Putin, but that doesn't matter. It's a really interesting stuff, Tony.
Well, it doesn't matter what we think, actually. It doesn't matter at all, because his approval ratings over the last 6 weeks or so have gone up from 60 to 70% in Russia.
Yeah, I don't mean in terms of approval.
Can you imagine a US president or any British prime minister with a 70% approval rating?
No, I can't. I can't remember a Western politician with such high
ratings. Well, the reason for it is everyone in Russia, nobody over here knows this, but everyone in Russia knows that for the last 8 years, Putin has been holding back on this, going in to support the Russian-speaking people in Lugansk and Donetsk, the breakaway Ukrainian republics. Putin is the guy. Everyone's been saying, come on, we've got to go and help those people. They're being bombed. So this is the press over there, particularly the Communist Party in the Duma. The main opposition have been saying, what are you doing, Putin? You've got to get some troops over there to defend them. And he's been saying, no, we don't want a confrontation with the West. And now he's finally said, yes, we're going to have to go in and do something. Because he's been holding back for 8 years, he's got much, much more public approval and much more public support than he probably would have had if they'd have gone in 2014 to support them. So I think he's a very astute politician, and he's only gone into this very reluctantly.
I don't believe the press over there and the pollsters over there any more than I do here. And what I was getting at was, I believe, and I'm not stubborn about this, I don't I'm not steadfastly clinging on to my opinions. I never do that. I don't care about being wrong. But I do believe that the forces that want to take us down this path of totalitarianism, they have as much control over the Russian government as they do over Western. I could very well be wrong, but that's the point I was trying to make.
And before we get off Ukraine,
I'll give you the final word. I just want to make this point.
Yep.
We're going to 6 o'clock, but we're going to finish at 6 hard today, sadly.
Okay, yep.
But I do want to talk, Savile, because I can't wait to hear what your thoughts. But listen, you have the last word on Russia. Then go ahead.
Well, I've had a couple of guests recently, Richie, who have really, both have blown my mind in their own way. First of all, it's a guy called Greg Felton, who wrote a book about the Israeli-US relationship called The Host and the Parasite. He's a Vancouver-based journalist. And what he said to me, I think, was, I mean, I just thought, well, do I dare even think this? What he's saying is that all the provocations to do with getting the Russians to come into Ukraine, that is to say threatening to get nuclear weapons, as Zelensky did the weekend before the Russians came in. I mean, this is an obvious, red rag to a bull, isn't it? Or a bear in this case. There's so many other things that they were doing, like constantly shelling Donetsk and other Russian-speaking parts of the country. The out-and-out Nazi parades going on in Ukraine. Look, the Russians can't turn a blind eye to this forever. 300 miles from Moscow, of course they can't. And also the fact that they tried to make a peace deal very hard back in Christmas. This was in the news over Christmas. The Russians want to make a peace deal for Eastern Europe. The West just ignored them, sent back the piece of paper. Not interested, mate. Well, they have to have some sort of negotiation now. He's kind of forced that. But anyway, what Greg was saying is that he thinks that the Israelis are behind this. Well, I mean, I'm not totally sure if he's right, but it's an interesting theory because we're not supposed to criticize Israel. You get thrown out of the political parties and things like that and kicked off of as a journalist if you say things like that. He reckons that the Russian support for Syria over the last, it's roughly the same time, isn't it? I think the Russians went into Syria about 2015, so that's about 7 years ago, has really annoyed the Israelis because they were hoping to, control Syria and to balkanize the Middle East. The Russians have put a big spanner in the works for the Israelis and the Americans' plans for the Middle East, the Yinon plan, the balkanization plan, so that Israel can expand its borders, which is what they really want to do. So that's what he's saying, is that this is just a kind of proxy war with the NATO and the US doing these things because of the power of the Israel lobby, which I think is an interesting theory.
It's an interesting theory. I don't buy it, though.
Well, have a listen. He does go into detail as to why he thinks it is. And his name's Greg Felton. You'll find him on one of my past shows about 3 weeks ago.
To thisweek.org.uk. Check out the Not BCFM Politics Show with Tony Gosling. It's live every Friday out of Bristol. It's a terrific show.
I mean, the Israel lobby is mega powerful.
Oh, it is, of course.
I'm chatting to someone tonight, interviewing him for tomorrow's show about the Israel lobby's takeover of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign in here in the UK.
Tomorrow at 5 o'clock, Tony Gosling. Now Jimmy Savile documentary. Let me intro this. I haven't seen the second and final part of it. A 3-hour, split into two parts documentary. Jimmy Savile. Is it the Jimmy Savile, a British horror story or something along those lines? Watched the first one last night. I have to say, some of the archive footage, absolutely gobsmacking. Absolutely gobsmacking. The questions thrown up by this documentary, the letters, obviously the letters is the big headline, but it's far more deeper than the letters between Charles and Jimmy Savile. I come at it from two angles, Tony, and then I'll shut up and get your thoughts on it as time is disappearing. I look at it two ways. Either Savile wanted to be caught because of all the clues he kept dropping in to interviews and live television appearances and public appearances, or the guy was so arrogant, so convinced of his own infallibility, so convinced that he was high enough up that he was untouchable, that he could say what he wanted. I don't know which is true, but I have to say, I didn't think it would be a great watch. It was compelling. What do you think of it?
Well, I didn't see it, Richie, but I will tell you what I make of how this all came out. I think historically, for hundreds of years, these kinds of characters have been hanging around the royal family and the British establishment. with impunity. Because of the advent of the internet, the ability to keep the lid on things like this. So, for example, you know, there's a Stephen Knight's book on Jack the Ripper is fascinating about the idea that that was all connected to the Freemasons and the royal family. But if the internet had been around back in those days, we might well have seen that story come to light, as it happened, back in the 1800s. But now we've got the internet has allowed people like me to get in touch with all sorts of people that I wouldn't otherwise be able to, and to share knowledge, to share information. It's been an absolute revolution. And I don't think back in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, there was any kind of consciousness that people like Savile would ever be revealed. Of course, when Savile died in 2011, the BBC ran a tribute that Christmas to Jimmy Savile. What a wonderful guy he was, even though they had been told by an old colleague of mine, Liz McKean, at Newsnight, that Savile was a paedophile, and that they had interviews, and they showed interviews to the Newsnight editor that they'd done with some of his victims. So, and yet immediately, as soon as he was dead, the cover-up started. Jimmy Savile, what a wonderful guy, even though the people who were putting those tributes out knew the guy was a paedophile. So this goes to show, this is how the establishment tries to cover these things up. And they very nearly succeeded, Richie. They very nearly succeeded, because it was September 2012, a year after he died, that Miles Goslett, after a lot of personal effort, time, and money put into getting his article about the Newsnight scandal with Liz McKean together, he went round all of the newspapers in London, tried to get the story published. Nobody would have a listen. He went to see Private Eye. Private Eye wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. Oh, we think it's a load of rubbish. And so all these people are supporting not only the establishment, but a paedophile establishment. And he only finally got it published by the Oldie magazine in September 2012. So this is the chronology of the story actually coming out to the public. But get this, they absolutely want to keep a lid on all this, the money people I'm talking about. And they've got a lot of power, and there's a lot of people out there who will do stuff for money, whether it's a bribe or whatever. I was just hearing the other day, Richie, about a friend of mine who he was a signatory on somebody's will. He said, they came along, they offered me 30 grand to say it wasn't my signature.
No way.
Yeah. Jesus. So, and he's because he's a decent guy of integrity, he refused. Then he got a threat to kill him through the post. A picture of someone pointing a handgun at him, through the post, for refusing to take the 30 grand bribe to say it wasn't his signature on somebody's will. This kind of stuff goes on all the time. The Metropolitan Police are busy knocking on people's doors saying, you're having an illegal party in there during a lockdown. They're just simply not up to the job.
Or you don't believe anyway, a man can be a woman or some bollocks like that. No pun intended.
It's run by idiots, basically, people who are just Jobsworths, and they're promoted because they're Jobsworths. But anyway, May 2014, Richard Ingrams, the editor of the Oldie magazine, is sacked. Now, remember, he was one of the original creators back in the 1960s of Private Eye, who was booted out when Hislop came along. And maybe I think it was may even have been somebody else. But anyway, so Private Eye ran for many years as a genuine satirical magazine. It's about time we had a new version of Private Eye, basically. Then there was another magazine, someone else who used to write for it, Simon Regan, put out a magazine which was also brilliant called, Scallywag, that's right. And he died. He was getting old anyway. But the fact of the matter is, Ingrams is sacked. So the only person who dared to publish the facts about Savile ended up out of his...
Amazing.
So nobody could ever go to him again to publish anything again about paedophilia. By the way, there's just a brilliant book just out about Dolphin Square by the ex-MP Simon Danchuk. So if there's anybody listening...
I interviewed Simon. I must get back in touch with him.
Well, it's called Scandal at Dolphin Square. It's just out. And you know what? Private Eye have done a hatchet job on it. What a load of rubbish, they say.
No way,
have they? That tells you, go and read the book. And in fact, I interviewed Mark Watts last week, who was at the trial of Nick, for example. He's been following this stuff for years. So it's called The Scandal at Dolphin Square, A Notorious History, Simon Danchuk and Daniel Smith. So there are people writing books, there are people getting stuff out, but it's extremely difficult to get it into the news.
Of course
the
it
news
is.
Almost seems to be sort of sealed up. And
here's a theory. Can I give you a theory? Because I'm looking at the clock, because we have to stop at 6.
Go for it.
Well, look, when I'm back after Easter, we'll do a much longer show. We will on this, because this is hugely important, as well as
it's
being interesting.
It's not gone away.
No, it won't go away. I have a theory. So I might lose some listeners by saying this, but I don't mind, because it's a theory. It's how I feel. I don't have any time for the royal family. I'm an Irishman, but it's not because of my Irish, you know, heritage and because of my Republican beliefs. It isn't. I just don't have any time for royalty, no matter where they are in the world. And I know that these families, you know, I know what happened in the Middle Ages and later the, you know, the breeding with the wealthy families of the world and the control. I know all about that. I don't like them. And I want to say this. I don't believe that Prince Charles is a paedophile. I don't believe that. Now, another, you know, I think less professional podcasts and stuff where people just say whatever they want without giving any care or consideration to ethical broadcasting. They'll say things like, all the royals are pedos. I don't believe Prince Charles is a pedophile. And I'll be hammered for saying this. I might be wrong. I believe that Charles was abused by Louis Mountbatten. I believe he's a victim.
I agree with you, yeah.
I believe he's a victim. I don't believe, and I hate this thing that, you know, paedophile victims or domestic abuse victims, they go on to be abusers. I don't believe that at all. But I wonder if the abuse suffered by Charles, if I'm right, from Mountbatten, if that plays any part at all in his relationship with Savile. It sounds stupid what I've just said there, but
well, no, it
I
doesn't.
Don't know.
No, I think you're absolutely on the money. I reckon that the royals for centuries have used paedophilia as a blackmail technique, and that they've encouraged people like Savile to hang around so that they can, well, once people are compromised by, you know, being involved with somebody like Savile, maybe taking a girl from him, a man, a boy, whatever. And then all of a sudden they're extremely useful politically, aren't they? That you can promote them up through the system. You can be their best friend. And of course, it's not just Savile that Charles has been very supportive of over the years. It's also the Bishop of Gloucester. He was jailed as a paedophile. Prince Charles was one of his best friends. Of course, Charles's main residence, Highgrove,
yeah, that's
is in
right,
Gloucestershire.
Of course, yeah.
And he was writing letters all the time to the court, which I don't think he's really allowed to do, saying this guy's a fantastic player. He was doing character references for this bishop paedophile. You know, so this is something which I think he believes he's above the law, basically, which is very dangerous. I think also cannot talk about Charles without Diana. I mean, I think he's got a horrific vendetta against anybody that helped Diana during her lifetime. For example, Martin Bashir has been horrifically attacked over the last couple of years simply for doing his job as a journalist and getting her thoughts out to the public, which she desperately wanted to do and she was very pleased to do. And yet he's been blamed for it, Richie. And I think ultimately where this all leads, you know, is where the Queen dies. Is this guy going to take over? God's sake, I hope not.
Well, some people don't believe that he will. A very good friend of mine who was in her time a brilliant journalist, Jean-Anne Crowley. Jean-Anne doesn't believe this guy will ever take the throne. But you've given me reason now to think that I'm wrong about Charles, you see. I just don't know.
No,
can I just say this? This is going to shock you. It won't. It might shock you. You have to see this documentary because it looks like that at one time, it looks like Diana was fairly fond of Savile.
Well, okay, so she probably didn't know anything about the guy.
Yeah,
but he was very much, you know, he's in the know. She was an outsider in the royal family, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She definitely wasn't an insider. She was the sort of person that she believed she could change the royal family for the better. But, I mean, I am particularly concerned about the way things are going, particularly with this, war, potentially, in Europe, in the Middle East. And I just want to say one thing, Richie, because I've got to go soon, and I think, as it's Easter, I always think this is a propitious time of the year. Do try and visit your local church at some point. Or don't try, just do it. A nonconformist church, go to high church, something like that. And I'm not talking about going in and ingratiating yourself to the clergy. Have a chat to the congregation, the other people in the church over Easter, and see what Easter is really all about. Because, of course, it's a Jewish festival and it's a Christian festival. But when it comes to war, which I do think is coming in Ukraine, One of my analysts said it's going to be another never-ending war in Ukraine because NATO will pour everything in there. The Russians will never be able to extract themselves. And I think there's some truth in that. Albert Pike is the man. This guy in the 1800s predicted three world wars. The First World War, which was in order to destroy the Ottoman Empire and get the British Empire into the Middle East, into the Holy Land. The Second World War, to create the State of Israel. And a Third World War, which was going to be a massive clash of religions, that is to say the Muslim and the Zionists, to have a massive fight. And the point of the whole thing was to discredit the faiths. And that was Albert Pike. He was a pretty dodgy guy, the Grand Master of Scottish Rite Freemasonry in the United States, and a kind of, you know, he was the kind of Henry Kissinger of his day.
Of his
so
time, yeah.
he was the wise man. Kissinger now is the wise man. He says, "Oh, I think maybe we've gone too far." But this is what the Bilderbergers always do. They are always one step ahead, saying, "Oh, I'm not so sure about this." But really, they're behind it in the first place, rather like Prince Charles.
Tony, thanks for coming on today. Happy Easter to you and your family. Folks, do me a favour. Go to Amazon.co.uk. Go to thisweek.org.uk. Order a copy of The Traitors
of
Ireland.
Not Amazon. Sorry, Richard.
Is it on Amazon?
Amazon have completely cut me
they've
out.
Kicked, completely. They've kicked it out, haven't
so
they?
So it's Bilderberg. Me. If anyone is interested,
Bilderberg.org.
The research I've done between the deals being done during the end of the Second World War, that's the last year of the war, between Desmond Morton, who was Winston Churchill's private secretary, and Martin Bormann.
25 seconds,
Adolf Hitler's private secretary. Bilderberg.org, you'll find the links and you can buy it on eBay, 15 quid a go.
The Traitors of Ireland, Bilderberg.org. It's brilliant. I've got a copy here.
Cheers,
Happy
Richie.
Easter, pal. Thanks. Bye for now. The great Tony Gosling, live on The Richie Allen Show. Not the BCFM politics show, is live at 5 o'clock every Friday. His guests are amazing. It's long form interviews at their best. 5 o'clock on Fridays, thisweek.org.uk or Bilderberg.org. Our pal Tony Gosling, thanks again to him. You're with The Richie Allen Show live from Salford this Thursday, April 7th.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. This is your Richie Allen Show, live from the magnificent city of Salford.